Activists in Europe say more than half of the food available on the continent ends up in the trash. They say it costs the economy there more than $130 billion a year. In Germany, the revelations have sparked a wave of popular movements aimed at curbing food waste. Among the most successful is a website called foodsharing.de. From Berlin, NPR's Soraya Sarhadi-Nilsson has the story.
One of the food-sharing internet site's founders is Cologne filmmaker Valentin Thurn. His documentary, called Taste the Waste, lays out in jolting terms how much food Europeans throw away each year, 90 million tons worth to be exact. That's enough to fill 3 million trucks stretched around the equator, according to the film. In addition, up to 50% of produce harvested at farms is thrown out, including tomatoes, the film says.
The computer checks the color to make sure they're right. And if they're the wrong color, they get zipped off to the side and thrown away.
Tuan says those statistics, as well as having parents who were hungry as children during World War II, led him on a mission with like-minded friends to try and stop so much food from being thrown away.
A lot of people ask for solutions, especially the younger ones in our team. They came up with the idea, well, everybody is talking about the sharing economy and they share everything. Why not food?
This sharing or collaborative economy, which relies heavily on the internet and makes available people's homes, cars and services, among other things, is a fast-growing trend around the globe. Filmmaker Tuan says applying that concept to thrown out food wasn't easy.
It was a little bit more tricky because food, obviously, there is a health risk associated, so we needed to establish some rules.
Tuan says after exhaustive work and consultation with lawyers, they created the nonprofit website called foodsharing.de 18 months ago. The concept is simple. Connect individuals who have food that is still good but they can no longer use with people seeking food for their personal use. Tuan says donations and grants pay for the upkeep of the website and advertisement, but the work is done by volunteers. Various supermarkets and bakers are also linked to the network, providing edible goods those businesses would otherwise throw away. These days, more than 240 German cities and 41,000 people are part of foodsharing.de. Tuan says that in the first year alone, they had 1 million visitors to the internet site. One food sharer on the site is Vero Buschmann, who lives in Berlin.
Hallo, hi, Vero. Hallo.
Hallo.
Okay, dann komm mal rein.
The child psychiatrist greets customer Franzi Zimmermann at the door and tells her to come in. The doctor shows the 26-year-old the bread she's picked up from the baker, as well as soup and chutney she's prepared, to which Zimmermann replies, wow, homemade soup, that's great, there's nothing better.
Hausgemachte Suppe.
Zimmermann, who is vegan, says she often uses the food-sharing website.
I do many things, but I'm totally broke most of the time, so this is a perfect opportunity to save money, and there's so much food wasted. Nobody's using it. That's why I try to get most of my food out of the dumpster or from food sharing.
Child psychiatrist Buschmann says she likes the idea of a shared economy, which is also why she joined Couchsurfing.org, a group that links international travelers with people willing to share their homes for free. Buschmann says she loves foodsharing.de because it does something good for society, not to mention the wide range of people she gets to meet. And the doctor says she finds the program more dignified than food banks in Germany, which require recipients to register and to line up to collect food.
I know many people who just feel ashamed to do this because everybody can see that they're queuing for this food bank thing.
Food sharing co-founder Tuan agrees, adding they alternate days with the food banks on who gets the surplus from vendors. But he says there are limits to the kind of foods his network provides. Vegetables, bread, and other items that list best before labels are allowed. Foods like meat with sell-by dates are not.
We cannot make sure that the cooling chain has been without any gap, so we don't take it at all. In this way, we avoid 99% of the risks.
He adds that people are encouraged to use the website to rate the food they get and haven't gotten any complaints. The doctor, Buschmann, says participants in foodsharing.de also assume the liability for what they give and receive.
By signing in, you sign also an application that you will not sue the shop for whatever happens to you when you eat the food. So it's just on your own responsibility. And of course, if it smells maybe weird or something, maybe better don't eat it.
The food sharing website works with volunteers called food savers, who pick up wares from supermarkets and bakers like Ali Cengiz.
And durch dieses food sharing haben wir die Möglichkeit, da noch ein bisschen was Gutes zu tun.
The baker says through this food sharing, not only do we feel we are doing something good, but we save money because it costs to haul all this stuff away as trash. Soraya Sarhadi Nelson, NPR News, Berlin.
The passenger pigeon was once the most abundant bird in North America, but by 1914, there was just one. She's now the highlight of a Smithsonian exhibit that opened here in D.C. this week, and as NPR's Ray Ellen Bashul reports, for some, she's still an icon.
Walk into the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History, through the main doorway, and you will see Martha. She was the last passenger pigeon, named after, who else, Martha Washington. And Helen James, the museum's curator of birds, says despite being dead for 100 years, she's a celebrity.
There's been a website up for a long time saying, put Martha back on exhibit. There are just that many people who care.
After years locked inside a metal cabinet, Martha's now perched on a branch, red eyes peering over her shoulder at museum goers. She isn't pretty.
Unfortunately, she's rather drab-looking for a larger-than-life bird.
Sort of looks like a mourning dove that got hit with an ugly stick. But despite the brown tousled feathers, this bird was and is an icon. Her stuffed body has been flown first class all over the country. Songs have immortalized her.
Yes, all that remained was the lines with the name of Martha. Very proud. Very sad, but very wise.
Why the obsession with this one bird? James says a lot of animals have gone extinct, but it's rare to be able to go to the zoo and look the last one in the eyes.
There she was alive. You could go and see her, and you could know when she dies, there goes the species.
The passenger pigeon's demise was dramatic. Joel Greenberg just wrote a book about it. He says their flocks used to darken the skies of North America. One report from Ohio in 1854 starts with people noticing strange clouds forming on the horizon.
As time went on, it became clear that those clouds were birds. And as more time passed, they were plunged into darkness. People who had never seen the phenomenon before fell to their knees in prayer, thinking the end times had come. The down beating of hundreds of millions of wings created drafts. People were cold.
The passenger pigeon's tendency to cluster in such staggering numbers, in the millions, was their Achilles heel. They were the cheapest protein on land, and there they were, lining the trees with potential for pigeon pot pies.
That made the species very vulnerable, because you could harvest them intensively all at once.
And that's what happened. Hunters communicated by telegraph to locate the massive flocks and then ship them off by the barrel, until there was only one, Martha. As the story goes, she lived to be about 30 years old, which is totally decrepit for a pigeon. When she was found one day lying on the bottom of her cage, her body was immediately encased in a 300-pound block of ice.
A large delivery truck rolled up to the rear of that building.
Shipped to the Smithsonian and stuffed for immortality. In part because of Martha, in 1900, the U.S. passed the first federal law protecting wildlife, and much later, the Endangered Species Act. But if you think we've learned our lesson, Greenberg says, think again.
The depletion of the oceans is going on now. No country controls the open seas, so nobody can impose limits.
And like the passenger pigeon, cod and bluefin tuna were once abundant. Overfishing has made them vulnerable. Hundreds of years from now, who knows what animal will end up stuffed next to Martha. Rail and Bichelle, NPR News.
You know a piece of a song. Till in a Cincinnati Zoo was the last one. Yes, oh.
The price of pork is on the rise, and a deadly pig disease is partially to blame. Porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, or PEDV, has killed more than 7 million piglets over the past year. Many hog producers are worried about how to keep their operations immune. Abby Fentress-Swanson reports.
These are a couple of pigs that I've got kind of set aside for the state fair. One's a crossbred barrow and one's a York barrow.
For the past 10 summers, Clayton Stevens has been showing his pigs at the New York State Fair. After the swine shows, the tall 19-year-old will sell his animals and begin to raise next year's group of show piglets, unless the fast-spreading porcine epidemic diarrhea virus makes its way onto his farm.
The main thing with the PD virus is that it hits the baby pigs. The number that I've heard is they've lost like 250,000 baby pigs, show pigs, and that's not even touching the commercial side.
Just a year ago, we had roughly a little over 100 operations impacted and affected by these viruses. Well, today it's over 4,700.
That's Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack speaking on the USDA's Daily Radio Report. In early June, his department pledged to spend $26.2 million to eradicate PEDV. The virus can't be transmitted to humans and doesn't pose a serious threat to older pigs, but it can slow down how fast hogs grow. Research is ongoing about the origin of the virus and how PEDV is spread.
It's a delicate balance because you don't want to raise people's concerns because that could have negative impact on market. You don't want to raise people's concerns because export activities could be impacted.
Vilsack says the continued spread of the disease and newly detected strains of the virus have moved the USDA to take a more aggressive stance. The department has approved the use of a vaccine that may protect piglets from the disease, even though it's still being tested in commercial settings. The USDA is also ordering hog producers to report new PEDV cases and is urging farmers to put biosecurity controls in place. Michael Yezzi raises 1,000 hogs a year and is trying to keep his hilly farm in Shushan, New York, PEDV-free through common sense measures, like washing down trailers that have been to the slaughterhouse, having visitors wear disposable plastic boots, and buying pigs from vet-checked breeders.
They don't know where this disease is coming from. Even closed operations that aren't getting pigs in from the outside have gotten this, even with the strictest biosecurity situations. So everybody's at risk.
More than a dozen state fairs across the country are also taking measures to slow the spread of the disease. Here's New York State veterinarian Dave Smith.
We did make the recommendation to the state fair that they not have nursing piglets with sows this year. We do know that PED is devastating to piglets under 10 days of age, and we really do not want to see a bunch of sick and dying piglets at the fair. It's an exhibit that no one needs to see.
Other states, including Virginia, South Dakota, and Ohio, have canceled certain hog shows or are requiring that pigs be taken to the slaughterhouse right after the fair. It remains to be seen whether tightening up biosecurity will slow the spread of the disease. Meanwhile, economists predict farmers will reduce the size of their herds to minimize the risk of PEDV infection. Consumers can expect pork prices to continue to rise during the second half of this year. For NPR News, I'm Abby Fentress-Swanson.
Good morning, I'm Renee Montaigne. As Scotland's national poet Robert Burns hailed Scotland's national dish, haggis, as the great chieftain of the pudding race. But the U.S. has banned the import of haggis for decades because it contains sheep's lung. Today, Britain will make the case to the U.S. Agricultural Secretary to lift that ban so Americans, too, can enjoy a dish made of lungs, heart, and liver encased in sheep's stomach. It's Morning Edition.